Welcome to Energy Matters, where we explore alternative health in the Pioneer Valley. I'm your host, Caroline Rutterman, and I'm a Reiki professional and intuitive in Northampton, Massachusetts. For the past 9 years, I've been teaching people how to use their intuition and helping them reduce stress and anxiety. Together, we'll talk with other practitioners and learn how they bring health and healing to the Pioneer Valley. Let's do this. Welcome back to Energy Matters. And we are here with Kristen Anthony, who is a somatic therapist. She does body-centered counseling work. Come on over and say hi to our guest today, who is Kristen Anthony. How's it going, Kristen?
Hi, I'm doing pretty well.
Good, good, good. So you're coming back from Lyme disease. When did this all happened? About a year ago? Is that correct? Like the initial kind of contact?
Yeah, I to the best of my knowledge, and I wouldn't say I'm on the other side of it quite yet, but last August I came down with really intense flu-like symptoms. My joints were hurting, and for 4 or 5 days I just had fever, intense joint pain, and I, you know, for a few days thought it might just be this random summertime flu, but I had my boyfriend check me for tick bites, and sure enough, he found the classic bullseye. Mm.
What is the classic bullseye? Can you talk a little, what does that look like?
Yeah, so I think it's just two, there's a center, it's a rash, so there's like the center dot and then a ring around it.
Okay.
Not every Lyme bite or Lyme infecting bite will have a bullseye rash, but if you have one, it's great because then you don't need to get the blood test. And the blood test even is only about, I think, 60% accurate.
Yeah, I was reading something. I picked up some pamphlets on, it was basically from this lab in New Jersey that tests for Lyme disease and things like that, and all these tick-borne diseases. And they were saying that a negative result for a Lyme test does not indicate that you don't have Lyme.
Yeah, they're not totally accurate. And in fact, I think I've heard that you need to have been bitten several times before it'll show up positive.
Why?
I don't know. I think that's just part of the limitations of Western science and medicine for now.
Do you know what they're testing for when they're doing that test?
You know, I've had it explained to me, and one of the symptoms that's been the most challenging for me over the past several months has been brain fog, which I've shared with you. And so one of the struggles has been I've been researching as much as I can about Lyme, and at the same time, the retention rate is very, very low.
I know everything, and then I've immediately forgotten it all.
Exactly. Yeah, so I did know at one point, and I can't tell you right now. Which I can laugh at now, but sometimes in the midst of that kind of brain fog where I'm trying to take in information and just can't, it can be really frustrating. But anyway, I felt pretty lucky back in August that I seemed to have caught it really quickly. And so I went on the doxycycline that seemed to help. And if you catch it early enough, the antibiotics can be really great. Like they can nip it in the bud. But I began having symptoms again, probably starting in January or February. And I don't.
So that was like a 6 month period between when your initial the course of antibiotics initially.
Yeah.
And then it recurred like 6 months later.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was from that original bite or if I got bit again, because I'm outside all the time. And I don't know about you, I've been seeing ticks all winter long. Like
Oh, really?
Yeah. My boyfriend.
You have tick vision.
Oh, well, I mean, like on me, like I'll pull them off. Of me. Yeah, yeah.
No, you just don't like spot them in the woods, just like a little RoboCop.
No, usually like I'll come back home and feel something on the back of my neck and, you know, pull it off.
But oh, wow.
I remember when I was a kid, like you never had to worry about ticks, you know, except for in the summertime, but they were around all year. So whether my symptoms came back from that original bite or if it was a new one that then went undetected, this round of symptoms have been much, much more challenging to treat, and the antibiotics didn't end up having much of an impact. So That's what led me to explore other alternative healing modalities.
Yeah. So let's, there's a couple things that you touched on, that I want to bring it back around to. And if you're just joining in, this is WXOJ 103.3 in Northampton, and you're listening to Energy Matters, and I'm Caroline Rutterman, and this is Kristen Anthony, and we're talking about Kristen's journey through Lyme disease. And as she says, she's not quite in it, over it yet, but on the other side of it. But we're kind of talking about the journey and the initial kind of process so far. So you kind of mentioned that your initial course of antibiotics, the doxycycline that you were on, how long of the antibiotics were you on?
The first time I got bit, I was prescribed 2 weeks, but I kind of demanded from my doctor I get another two just because I wanted to be extra cautious.
Is that standard, the 2 weeks, or is that like the 4 weeks, or how do you kind of make that? Like, how come you advocated so hard for the extra 2 weeks?
Well, I advocated because, to be honest, the information varies from doctor to doctor. Like, one of the things I found about Lyme is that despite me trying to find, what's the one thing that works? It's very hard to find consistent information. And I think part of the reason is everybody's different and different treatments are going to work differently for different people.
Absolutely.
Part of the journey has been finding an individualized protocol. But for the doxycycline, most people I've talked to have said, between 4 to 6 to even 8 weeks, if you catch it early enough, is minimum. So I don't know why I was only prescribed 2 at first. Most of the information I heard had suggested a minimum of 4.
Okay.
So that was one of the reasons I advocated, but
yeah,
it seems like every doctor will tell you something different.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember this was many years ago. There was a documentary on Netflix, and I think it was called Under the Skin. We had chatted about it before. Mm-hmm. And that documentary was about the people who had chronic Lyme disease, mm-hmm. who had been suffering from Lyme disease for 10 years. And, there was early on when a lot of these cases were coming up, they were having these mysterious disease, these mysterious symptoms, and no one could figure it out. And there was a lot of doctors kind of saying, basically this is psychosomatic and this is all in your head. And it was incredibly frustrating for a lot of these, folks who were, kind of early crusaders essentially in the medical world, who were saying no, this is what I have. And I remember there was one doctor who was completely disbarred for doing this work, but he was treating people with courses of antibiotics that would last several months at a time.
Oh, wow.
And, like I said, these were people that were very much at the end of the rope, had been trying tons of stuff, but he was doing these long course antibiotics, which, as somebody who has been on antibiotics, when I was growing up, I had a lot of acne, I'd go on antibiotics, and then I would get a yeast infection. And then, it was it just really wrecked my gut.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard when you're on. And I could only remember, I could only think about how hard it is to be on a system of a course of antibiotics for that amount of time. Even a month to me sounds like a really long time.
A month feels like a very long time. That was about how much the second time I went on it, the doctor recommended it for 2 months, and I couldn't handle it. My stomach is very sensitive to begin with, but it can definitely wreak havoc on other systems in your body.
Yeah, it's just your gut flora is so important. Mm-hmm. And something that I think is a much larger conversation, but we know that there's a very strong correlation between our gut health and our mental health.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, and I think what you were describing too, with that doctor prescribing months and months of antibiotics, it speaks to the limitations which I found in Western medicine in dealing with Lyme, because that's pretty much all they can do. And I was lucky that the doctor I saw, he didn't say it clearly, but if I read between the lines, what he was basically saying, here, I can give you antibiotics, but this is all I can do. And if they don't work, we can double it. We can keep you on it longer. But he really strongly recommended finding specialists outside of Western medicine. He was find a holistic practitioner, find whatever. He was basically saying, this is all we are allowed to do.
This is all I got.
This is all I got. Yeah.
You want some pills? Yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, I think it can be like a miracle for some people. Like if you catch it early enough, the antibiotics can be great. But I couldn't handle it for much more than 4 or 5 weeks. It was really challenging.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, was connected with different people in the community, and I'm on several different protocols.
Yeah. So when you were on the antibiotics, for the month of 4 weeks, what was challenging for you to like for your body, for you to handle antibiotics for that amount of time?
I just had a lot of stomach upset and generally, you know, and one of the things, it's actually hard to know like what were the Lyme symptoms and what were the antibiotics, but yeah. I know it was mostly like the stomach upset that was hard, lack of appetite. You know, you have to take it, you know, between meals, and I was experiencing a lot of nausea. It was really hard to eat. And for me, like, I'm already pretty thin. Like, I need to eat, and it was becoming really challenging. So I was like, okay, what's more important? Like, staying on these antibiotics and tracking symptoms was really, really important too. Like, so after several weeks, I was like, are my symptoms any different than when I started? And I this is something I consulted with my healthcare professional about, or several people. And if I didn't just stop it, you know, on my own, but I said, you know, like, these symptoms are really still the same. And they said, yeah, it's probably okay to go off of them and try something else. But yeah, then I was sort of like feeling like keeping myself well fed was
important.
Very important.
Yeah, yeah. It's the foundation. It's like diet, exercise.
Exactly.
Sleep. Yeah.
Yeah.
So can you talk to me a little bit more about the tracking of the symptoms? Like, what did you have, like a chart, and you were like, nausea, check.
Yeah.
First of all, like, what did the chart look like? And also, what were, because I know that's one of the huge things, that the symptoms are different for everybody.
Yes. Yeah. They can be very wide ranging. And I wish I could say I had this like really organized and thorough chart. I really don't. Like, what tracking my symptoms consists of is like writing on scraps of paper and like keeping it in a shoebox with all my other like medications and whatever.
Dated.
Yeah. 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 So, but it has been recommended. I've still been thinking like I should make a chart. I think it would probably be really helpful. But yeah, the symptoms can range. Like my biggest symptoms from the Lyme are really like the fatigue, joint pain, and the brain fogs. Like the neurological issues have been the biggest ones for me. But I know other people have a whole nother set of symptoms they might experience.
Yeah. And so the brain fog was really affecting you. All right. So say that one more time. It was the brain fog. And what were the other,
joint pain and joint fatigue pain
and fatigue. Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, debilitating. Da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. I was like, wait. So the fatigue is, I remember one of my friends who experienced, I've had several friends over the years who have had Lyme, and one anecdote that I remember is one of my friends just walked up a flight of stairs, and then she was so exhausted, she just started sobbing.
Oh,
like, it was that level of fatigue, though. And it was just, I mean, to me, it's just like, wow, like, yeah, you walk upstairs, but
yeah,
it's like debilitating.
It's debilitating. And even mental tasks, like I, you know, sometimes I'll get an email, and just the thought of responding to that email feels so daunting.
Yeah, like that's every day sometimes for me.
Yeah, that might not be the line. But yeah, I've definitely had moments of that where like, even like I'll get out of bed, go downstairs, make breakfast, and then just be like, that took everything out of me. I need to go back to sleep.
Yeah,
like
it.
And it comes and goes in waves, but I can so relate and empathize with just wanting to like break down and sob over the little tasks that used to be, you know, I could do sort of mindlessly and now require so much effort.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder, and so the joint pain, just want to like touch on that as well. Tell me a little bit about like what the experience was like or how that manifested for you, what the joint pain was. Was it like hands, shoulders, hips, like everywhere, or?
Yeah, I feel it mostly in my upper body, to be honest. But the first time that I got bit, before I realized I had gotten bit, what actually happened was my partner and I took our motorcycles to the Cape. He'd never been to Cape Cod before. He's from Utah.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, we should take the bikes. It's like a 3 or 4 hour ride.
Okay.
And we got to a campground, set up our tent, and I was just like, man, my knuckles are like really hurting, and I could feel it in my elbows too. And I was sort of chalking it up to the long ride we had just done.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I had been on a bike that didn't have a windshield. Like, I'm used to riding with some sort of windscreen. So I was like, man, maybe it was just from, like, gripping so hard, you know? But the next day I woke up and I was like, oh my God, I don't think this is from the bike. Like, my neck was very, very, very tight. And again, like, it was like the knuckles and elbows, but it was also, it was like this very, it's like a very general, just body soreness. It's sort of hard to describe because, I feel like sometimes if I can pinpoint the pain, like in my left elbow, then it'll move. It's like this traveling kind of experience. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so
like migrating pain.
Yeah. And one thing I feel really lucky about was that my symptoms were so extreme the first time. Like, I don't know how I rode that motorcycle back home because I was just like,
mind over matter sometimes, right?
Yeah.
Just like survival kicks in.
Exactly.
Like, I can do anything.
Yeah. I popped the ibuprofen and I was like, let's do this.
Yeah.
And then pretty much collapsed when I got home. But the second time my symptoms came back, they were much milder. It didn't hit the same way.
Okay.
And if I hadn't had that first experience, I would have just been for probably let it go for a really long time, which I think a lot of people do, because I would have been like, oh, that's weird. I have some like mild elbow pain and some mild this, whatever. But the only reason I started to think it was Lyme was like, oh, this is the same places where I felt pain the first time. It's just not as intense.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And so I think I've heard stories from people where their symptoms, they'll just let it go for a really long time because it isn't this like in your face clear. There aren't these clear indicators sometimes like, oh, you definitely have Lyme. It could just be very mild and vague.
And, you know, I think that's something also when that is very symptomatic in how we deal with pain is that it's just like, oh, it's just a little bit here, a little bit there. And then we tend to adapt, you know, like a little bit of low back pain or a little bit of shoulder tension becomes kind of the new normal.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's only when people are like, wow, I threw my back out and I can't get up. That's when they're just like, it's like the dramatic shift or like a break in how we're able to adapt with our daily lives.
Right.
That all of a sudden sparks some kind of change. I mean, not everybody approaches pain that way. You know, I mean, for me, because I do energy work and I, you know, am a healer. So I, you know, I'm always like, ooh, there's some pain. Like, what's this all about? Like, I want to explore this. So whenever my body starts talking to me, I'm just kind of like, ooh, like I get excited because I'm just like, there's something that needs to be addressed. And, you know, that's like, to me, it's like an inner exploration. But, you know, oftentimes, you know, we just ignore it because pain is uncomfortable and, you know, and we have other things to deal with.
Totally. And I think that a lot of us are very have a very strong mind body split.
Yeah.
And I can include myself in that. And that's one reason that I did get into body centered psychotherapy was, you know, I was certainly very dissociated for most of my life. And I think that's common for a lot of people to feel subtle shifts in their body and just kind of ignore it. And I know for me, the second time I ignored it for a little while, I noticed that there was a lot of terror there that I wasn't sure if I wanted to face, but then I realized letting it go would probably be way worse than sort of like making room for the fear around it. Cause I felt it in my elbows first and I was like, oh no, like the panic of Lyme came back.
Right. You're like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Welcome back to Energy Matters. And we are here with Kristen Anthony, who is a somatic therapist, otherwise known as body-centered. She does body-centered counseling work. So when we left off, we were talking a little bit, you know, we really touched on a lot of things, but we were really talking about the experiencing of the symptoms, having gone through the first course of Lyme disease, course of antibiotics, with the initial kind of bullseye, the initial like physical symptoms of, you know, the brain fog and the joint pain and all that kind of stuff. And then the re-experiencing after having gone to the doctor and taken the antibiotics, the re-experiencing of the severe joint pain and realizing that like, oh my gosh, this is really scary. Like I am having these same symptoms again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that aspect of fear is huge. I mean, it's, you know, it's, I think that when Yeah, fear is huge. Fear is, like, you know, is everything that blocks us.
Definitely. Yeah.
So how did I know initially you kind of were like, oh, my gosh, like, I'm going to pop an ibuprofen, you know, like you're in the middle of like a motorcycle trip out to the Cape and you pop an ibuprofen and you like just make it back home, you know, like,
yeah,
like kind of dealing with that. So after that initial kind of like, I guess how, what I'm trying to sort of formulate my question here, how did the like mental and emotional component, how did that start playing into the pain of the Lyme disease, or how did that kind of run alongside it?
Yeah, so I have sort of a short answer and a long answer to that. So I'll just start with I'll do the long answer.
Yeah, we're here, we're chilling.
So I'm not only a client of body-centered psychotherapy, but I'm also trained in it, and I'm a practicing therapist. And this mode of therapy is based on the idea that our issues live in our tissues. Okay. So everything that happens to us, it's not just stored as a memory in the brain, but our cells, the cells in our body actually store memories as well. And oftentimes when...
You know, let's pause on that, because that's kind of a huge concept.
Yeah.
And also, I would say the foundation for a lot of like alternative health.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. So so the issues in the tissues is sort of the like the slogan for that. Right.
Yeah.
And so it's the idea, like you said, of our memories being stored in our cells.
Yeah.
How, what is that? Can you give us like a example of like what that looks like?
Yeah. So a lot of what gets stored in our body depends on if we have support to feel through something in the moment or not. So as little kids, you know, we get hurt, we fall, we scrape our knees, we might experience trauma. And if we don't have enough support to feel whatever experience we're going through in the moment, whether it's a parent who says, you know, suck it up, or if you're going to cry, go to your room, whatever, right, or even, you know, on the other sort of the more extreme level, like a parent who's very abusive, if that kid doesn't have support to feel through the impact of that, it's going to get stored in the body. And that's actually a really intelligent defense mechanism.
Yeah.
So let's say the example like I like to use is if a kid is learning to ride a bike, let's say his mom or dad or her mom or dad, you know, pushes the kid off and says, go for it. And they ride the bike and then they fall and scrape their knee. If the parent is able to come and scoop them up and hold them while they cry, you know, like that memory won't necessarily stay stored in the body because they'll have support through that painful experience.
Absolutely.
But if they fall off the bike and let's say dad comes over and says, you know, suck it up, get back on the bike, and, you know, whatever, yeah, and doesn't
be a man,
right, and doesn't support the trauma of that experience, that all the adrenaline and fear will get stored in the body, because for a little kid who doesn't have the same resources and supports as a grown adult, that can feel like life or death,
right?
So it's this really intelligent system our body engages in to say, like, okay, we're going to put this to the side because it's not safe to feel this right now. And what happens is that can lead to chronic tension, chronic anxiety, depression, like any number of physical ailments. Like what I'm finding more and more in this work is that almost every human experience can have emotional roots to it.
Absolutely. Well, we're emotional creatures, you know? That's how we navigate the world, you know? When we fall in love with somebody, we're like, we want more of them, you know? Or, you know, when something feels not great, like we tend to, you know, we respond.
You know, no parent is perfect and they can't be on top of their game all the time. So maybe the kid falls one time and the parent one time loses it and doesn't have patience or whatever. But depending on, you know, there's so many different kinds of trauma that can happen at different ages and can have different consistencies.
Yeah.
But what I can say about my experience in this work is that I have come to the realization that I had a lot more trauma in my childhood than I had originally thought.
Yeah.
And when I first entered therapy, I was very dissociated and disembodied. And through my work as a client, I've begun to come more into the body. I've come to trust more of the symptoms I was feeling that included, like I said, dissociation, anxiety, depression. I had chronic digestive issues. And anyway, so I say all that to say Well, one of the things that we do in body-centered therapy is we help support a client through a really challenging emotion. And oftentimes when what's called an implicit memory, so we have our explicit memory, which is sort of like the cognitive narrative of our lives, versus the implicit memory is the memory that lives in our cells. And if that gets touched, it can feel like an old trauma is happening right in the present moment.
Gotcha.
So let's say like as that kid who fell off the bike as an adult is riding a bike. Maybe that implicit memory of falling off the bike and not having support and that gets touched and they all of a sudden feel fear and panic and don't know why. So this implicit memory doesn't necessarily have a cognitive narrative to it, but it's very real and it feels very present. And what we do in this work is we help support somebody through that experience. Like we help them form enough safety and support in the body to live through that and release it. Because when these implicit memories don't have to be forever, but yeah. The only way they can get released is through a supportive, loving connection. Like I would never recommend to somebody like go home and like touch some implicit memory and just, you know, it can be re-traumatizing.
Don't just like activate it. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so what I found as a client in this work is a lot of the implicit memories that were getting touched that I was very hesitant to go near were feelings of invasion and craziness, like in my own head.
Interesting.
And a lot of these symptoms coming up with the Lyme are so identical. I don't think it's a coincidence that I'm going through this right now, because there are so many experiences that I just have not been wanting to move towards, and it almost feels like my body's saying like, okay, now's the time to come to term with these feelings that live in your body, the feelings of invasion, of being really, really messed with. And I can't speak for everyone's experience, but like I said, the idea that our issues live in our tissues, I don't think it's just limited to our emotional process. Like I think that physical, like for example, I have celiac disease, which is an autoimmune disorder. Mm-hmm. And I grew up in a family where I was taught to sort of turn against myself, right? And that's what autoimmune means. It's like the body's immune system is turning in on itself. And so I adopted this like energetic pattern. And Lyme disease can work in a very similar way. The spirochetes can turn your immune system on itself. So yeah. I feel like...
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, this has really been...
And the spirochetes are the tick, the virus that is born through the ticks.
Yeah, it's a bacteria, I believe. I can't speak to the science very well. But basically, like one reason that Lyme disease can be so, so difficult to treat is that the spirochetes work differently in different people. They'll basically find the weak points in a person's system and target that.
Okay.
And like I said, I can't speak so much to the science of that, but in terms of somatic processing, like that so mirrors the energy of my parents, you know, like, like if I remember sitting down with, I think it was an acupuncturist, and she was describing in detail, like how the spirochetes work, how they, you know, trick your immune system into opening certain things up in your body so they can get into your collagen and eat it away. And like all these,
that's crazy.
It's crazy. It's like so sadistic. And the more she talked about this, like the messing with and like the devouring, I was like, that sounds so much like my mom and dad.
Like, yeah. You're like, this is having some very funny mirroring things happening right now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
wow.
So that was like, that's been a lot of the terror that's come up for me that has been really important to hold. And one reason that I feel so strongly about having this be part of the healing journey for anyone is that it's had the most impact in terms of alleviating symptoms. Like anytime I've tried a protocol that was all about like, I just need to get rid of the Lyme and move on without really sitting and sort of like feeling what was happening and moving through that with somebody, that hasn't really worked.
So the underlying way that somatic therapy believes issues in the tissues, and that we're holding a lot of these like old trauma memories in our bodies, right?
Yeah.
So, and when the Lyme disease comes in and the symptoms start manifesting, like because of the way that the spirochetes operate, they're kind of looking throughout your system for areas of weakness, and that's how a lot of the things start like manifesting. And so, and you're feeling like it's mirroring a lot of the things that you were avoiding anyways,
yeah,
which is, I guess, falls in line with like those are our areas of weakness, right? When we're not healing them or loving them or addressing them in some way, like getting them to like open up and release, right?
Right.
So it's kind of almost like, I mean, and I know this might be a controversial thing to say, but it's almost just like the, you know, the Lyme disease almost feels like a guru, like a self guru, just so, like, oh, yeah, here's all the things you want to work on.
Yeah.
And it's going to take over your life for right now. So it's almost like you become like, it becomes, you know, a monastery. It's
yeah,
like your body is a temple and it needs some cleaning.
Honestly, like that's been something I've gone back and forth on a lot. Like in some ways I have this to thank, like it's been such a wake up call for these things that are happening in my body that have already been happening that I haven't been tending to.
Interesting.
But I don't want to befriend the Lyme because I really want it out at the same time. Like, yes, this is bringing up valuable lessons. So the way I'm trying to look at it is like, this might be a wake up call from spirit or the universe or life force, like whatever you want to call it. But I don't want to start welcoming the, like, I don't want
more of it.
I don't want more of it, and I don't want it to stay. I'm gonna, like, I can thank it, but because it gets confusing, like some, like I think a lot of, well, this is the other thing that can happen with the human body, is that it will after a long time maybe start just incorporating the Lyme and saying like, okay, I guess this is just part of my system now,
it's the new normal,
right? And I don't want that to happen. So so my gratitude goes to like the universe, like thank you for bringing the Lyme, but like the Lyme I'm not ready to befriend. It's too hard.
Right And I think thoughts and emotional patterns to gratitude, mm-hmm, to thanking and like visualizing and being thankful for like the aspects of the things that are going really well in our lives. And you know, it's
like it's been a good balance too of like inviting in that positive perspective and the gratitude, but also not being in denial of the extreme terror and what we call in somatic therapy, like the death layer feelings that are getting touched.
The death layer.
Yeah.
That's a good metal band name.
Yeah, right? That is a good name. So it's been like a balance of like having moments where I just like reach out for support for like feeling like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm going to die. This is so scary.
Yeah.
To also being like, okay, thank you. These are things I just need to look at.
Yeah.
Including, you know, like, I think this is probably true for a lot of people. Like, I just wanted to be able to take a pill to get rid of it.
Yeah.
But one thing that having Lyme disease asks us to do is to become really intimate with our bodies, including, like, if you're on an herbal protocol, to pay attention, like, how is this impacting my body? To, you know, checking yourself for ticks. And I don't mean just, you know, like, taking a visual scan of your arms and legs, but for anyone who's found a tick on them, they go for the dark cracks and crevices, and you have to be willing to be really comfortable with like you know, checking your body that way. Like there's an herbalist I've been working with, and she said, you know, if you don't say prayers at night, this can just be like your nightly prayer, just like check your whole body.
Oh.
and it's a really nice way to sort of like befriend yourself and to just, like I said, become more intimate with like, what's my body feeling, what do I feel on my body. That's been huge for me.
Yeah. And also like what you had mentioned earlier, doing the like symptom tracking.
Yeah.
You know, just being like, you know, if you're in your body and you're like, okay, today I'm feeling really nauseous, and you know, and seeing that slip is, you know, the last 3 days in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, okay, I'm experiencing nausea for the last 3 days. Mm-hmm. And it's not just like 10 minutes here and there, I've been feeling this for, you know, 60 hours or something. It's right. An acknowledgement of how your body is feeling.
Yeah. And then you can look back too and say like, well, did I increase anything? Did I stop taking something? What did I eat? You know, like it's a good way to track how different remedies are working in the body.
Yeah. So how, I know you said that you have a whole team of people that you work with, that you sort of have a whole family of the somatic therapy, you know, like friends as well as colleagues that you like really rooted down with, that you worked with an herbalist. I know you mentioned a naturopath at one point before we started chatting on the show, as well as an acupuncturist. But I do want to kind of focus a little bit more on the somatic therapy. And let's say that that I am having that fear layer, that death mm-hmm. layer, like you said, like, oh my God, I'm scared I'm going to die.
Yeah.
What would, if you were like sitting here with me, and I was experiencing that feeling of like really, really deep fear. Mm-hmm. Like, what would a session with you look like? Like, how would we do that?
Yeah. Well, I would probably just first ask if I could just be with you in that level of terror, you know, that feeling of like, I'm so scared. I feel like I'm going to die. Like, can I just be with you there? And depending on how well you were able to take that in would depend on where we go in the session. But what's really important is just to be able to feel enough support to feel that feeling and move through it without it being re-traumatizing.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
So, like, when you asked me, can you be here with me? I mean, we're sitting right across from each other. Like, I'm like, yeah, we're here right now. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
Well, what that means is, like, as you're feeling the terror, can you also feel that I'm here with you? Oh. And you might feel like you're going to get swept away by the terror, but I'm not. Like, I'm going to be here. And even if you feel like you're going to fall apart, I can help hold all your pieces.
Oh, my God. It's going to make me cry. That's so beautiful. I love that. Yeah. Aww.
So you were able to take that in.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Wow. That's really, really beautiful. So it kind of gets people a little out of their minds and bodies for a second. So I just feel like we're having a moment here.
I do, too. I love this work because, I mean, what has been so profound to me over the years, but especially with this experience of Lyme, is how healing it is to just be met exactly where we are in every experience as human beings. Like whether those experiences feel really terrifying or whether they feel really joyful.
Yeah.
Especially if we didn't, you know, always have that as kids, if we didn't have parents who could just say like, oh wow, you look really sad. Can I just be with you?
Yeah.
You know? So I've just been amazed by the healing potential. Like, I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to be any different. Like, I can feel exactly how I'm feeling. And if I know that, you know, somebody can be with me in that place, like, that's already the healing. And, you know, I think I was really trying to rush through the Lyme at first, like, I just need to get rid of this or whatever. But the more I found, like, I've been able to just sit with the symptoms and the process of it, like I said, that's what's felt really healing. And just like what you were feeling now, like, that I think that's really all we need as human beings is just a simple, loving connection for any experience we're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I know that, so how has your, like, working with other somatic therapists, essentially, how has that shifted or, like, how has that impacted your like Lyme symptoms, like the mental and emotional components? Like, have you noticed that you're less fearful on a regular basis now, or that you're just like okay with those feelings? Or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I guess like, do you have like an anecdote or something that is like, can you tell us a little bit more about how it's like directly impacted your process?
Yeah, I would say
your health, I should say.
I would say that it's helped me trust more in the temporary nature of feelings. And I think I'll just speak for myself.
Mind blown.
Yeah.
Those are some really big spiritual practices.
Oh my God, yeah. Well, because I know when I start feeling the joint pain come on, or I feel like my brain isn't working as well as it did this morning or whatever, I tighten against it so hard because I'm scared that like if I let myself feel this, it's going to be forever. And so what this work has helped remind me is that these sensations come and go in waves, and if I stop holding against them and just sort of ride the wave with support, keyword, that it won't last forever, and actually the other side feels much better.
Yeah.
So for example, so I continue my training at the Hartford Family Institute in Connecticut. Cool. And so last Wednesday we had a lecture, and I asked about, you know, I described some of the brain issues I was dealing with and the brain fog and how scary it's been. And what my teacher offered was to trust that my brain was doing what it needed to do to heal. Like, in other words, kind of like what I said to you about, you know, like, can you feel the fear and I'll be here with you? He said, can you trust that your brain is actually working very hard for you, and to sort of like give in to the confusion and the spin and the fog and whatever. And so as I lived through that experience with that support, I noticed the next day my brain felt so clear, like clearer than it's felt in a long time. Like I felt like queen of the world. I was like, I can do anything, you know, and so, and it came back. But the more I've been holding against the symptoms, the more intense they get. And when I can just trust that they're here and move through them. And oh yeah, rest has been a really important part of that in terms of allowing symptoms to happen. But not only do I move through them, but it's much better on the other side.
Oh, cool.
It's definitely an act of like trust though. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, like a lot of the work that I do as a Reiki teacher, as well as a Reiki professional, is a very similar process of like, you know, when we are feeling that fear, we do tend to like lock up and squeeze our shoulders and hold it down. And like, we freeze it. Like you said, it's like, we just put it into our bodies and we remember all that stuff, like consciously, like cognitively, we might not remember it, but like our body sure does.
Yeah.
And, you know, being able to soften, to be able to open ourselves up, and you know, it's a really powerful way. It's like, that's actually how we heal, when we like soften and open and allow things to flow through us and then out again. And it sounds like somatic therapy is really doing very like awesome work on a, like, you know, it's like the therapy is like so important, you know, it's like we have to kind of be able to process and understand like what's going on, not just with our bodies, but you know, the world around us. And you like be able to train, like be able to use our bodies as like, to trust our bodies.
Totally.
It's like they're like, our feet are walking us around,
right?
You
right.
know, they're the things. I say they, like we all have like multiple bodies, but but you know, like these bodies that we have are digesting our food and helping us restore and deal with stress, and
right, and they don't make things up. Like we're not, our body's not just going to be like, I'm going to make your elbow hurt today. You know, it's like
it's usually communicating something.
Exactly. Yeah. So trusting those communications is a process.
Really cool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're kind of coming towards the end of our show. Is there anything that you would recommend as like a daily self-practice, if you know of anyone that's kind of experiencing Lyme, or that just kind of wants to check out your somatic therapy? Like, is there something that you would recommend that would be a really cool tool to practice by themselves, or just self-care technique that you would recommend to our listeners?
Yeah, that's a good question. What I found has been the most helpful for me, not only with Lyme, but in life in general, is really finding the right support that works for you, or even just knowing somebody you can call when challenging emotions or symptoms come up, that you can, like, even if that is like a daily routine, just to call, like wake up, have a friend you trust and be able to call them and say like, listen, this morning I'm feeling so tired, I'm feeling really nauseous, like can you be here with me? That's sort of like the best advice I can offer, is like really find support for every experience. Because for people out there who are struggling with Lyme, whether it's a recent bite or you've been struggling for 30 years, it's a really challenging journey. And I would just encourage people not to try to go through it alone.
Yeah, that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
So call a friend, everybody, when you're feeling stressed out, and, you know, somebody that you trust and that you can allow them to hold that space with you, and or call Kristen, because she's amazing. So we're finishing up our show. This is Energy Matters with Caroline Retterman, and Kristen Anthony is our guest here today. And you can reach Kristen at contact at kristenanthony.com, and that's KristenAnthony.com. And that's also her website, is kristenanthony.com. So reach out if you're kind of feeling, you know, if you're going through any of these symptoms yourself, you know, you don't have to do it alone. And, you know, there's a whole community in Northampton that is willing to help you. So check out this work. So I'm going to put on a song as we close out. Have a great afternoon and evening, and we'll see y'all in a couple weeks. Take care.